Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Fellowship Greenville Student Podcast. We are continuing our series called Practicing the Way of Jesus and further understanding what it means to live as our Master Jesus lived. This week, we look at some foundational ideas of that and discovered that we will never experience the life Jesus offers unless we embrace the lifestyle Jesus modeled. And that all begins with abiding in his presence. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this message.
Hello, everyone. Howdy. All right. Hello, everyone. And I'd like to welcome you again to Fellowship Greenville students. We are so glad you're here. If you don't know me, my name is Matt Denske, student ministry pastor here at Fellowship Greenville. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for worshiping with us tonight. Powerful worship, powerful moving in the spirit here tonight. Thank you for being here. I would say if you were here last week, but we had a snow day, which was pretty awesome, right? So if you were here 2 weeks ago, then you know we have started a brand new series for our spring semester entitled Practicing the Way of Jesus. Practicing the Way of Jesus. Fun fact, you may not know this, but for hundreds of years, the early church were not known as Christians. Christian is a name that came later, after hundreds of years, but the first generations of people who believed in Jesus were known as followers of the way, which is kind of a cool, almost mystical way of describing those who believe in Jesus. If you're a fan of Star Wars, this might appeal to you, especially if you're a fan of the Mandalorian series, this is the way, all right? But the early believers were known as followers of the way. Christians came later. In fact, when the word Christian was used to describe those who believed in Jesus, it was always a negative connotation. People were making fun of them and calling them little Christs, and that's what Christians mean. But we've adopted the name Christians proudly because we try to be little Christs in our lives. But originally, we were known as followers of the way, stemming from Jesus' teaching out of John 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so we follow the way. We practice the way of Jesus. And we're going to talk more about that tonight, and I don't think there's any better way I could begin tonight's message pointing us towards what does it mean to practice the way of Jesus other than showing you guys this right here. Are you ready? This will make perfect sense. I have two words for you tonight. Hold on. Let's not go there yet. I don't know. Let's not go there yet, please. Okay. We'll jump the gun there. That's okay. I'll cue them up, I promise. I have two words for you tonight that will sum up everything. Are you ready? God milk. You there? You with me? You with me? It makes complete sense. Everyone's like, oh, okay, cool, man. That's great sermon so far. Listen, hear me out. Now, I know this may not make sense to you. Some of you guys may not even catch the reference, although it still exists today. But when I was growing up, I'm going to reveal something to you guys. I was born in the 80s. It is true. I was born in the 1900s. I was born in the 80s. In the 90s, an iconic ad campaign hit the ground running. In fact, 1993, an iconic ad campaign hit the ground running for, you guessed it, milk. Has anyone ever seen this ad campaign? Yes. Okay. I hold on, I'll cue it up. I promise you, I'll cue it up. Okay, I promise. I will let you know when I want that picture, all right? The Got Milk ad campaign started in 1993. A focus group met together, and before they came together, they were instructed, do not use milk for 1 week. Go 1 week without using milk, which, like, doesn't sound that hard. You'd be like, oh, okay, it's like not that life-changing. What was amazing is everyone came into that focus group after going 1 week without milk, and everyone resonated the same idea. I can't believe how much I missed milk in my life. I don't know if that hits with you, but it hit with them in the 90s, all right? And so I miss it. And so, like, they would describe, like, man, I went downstairs and I poured cereal in my bowl and I diced up bananas on top, and then I went to go get my milk to pour in and it wasn't there. And everyone in this, like, focus group started to describe this weird emotional attachment that they had to milk. And it made no sense because it's like, milk? Really? Milk? But once it was removed from their life, this household staple, they realized, wow, without it, we actually felt like almost like our household wasn't complete, like we needed that thing in our home. And so that launched this idea. What if we can make others feel like this is something that everybody needs? And this ad campaign, launched in 1993, became the most successful ad campaign of the 90s. And even to date, nothing has even come close to touching the effectiveness of this ad campaign. In 2 decades' time, it ran 70 commercials and donned over 350 of the infamous milk mustaches on celebrities, rock stars, pop stars, athletes, even cartoon figures and politicians were donning the famous milk mustache, all to represent milk. It was the most effective ad campaign to date that you could possibly imagine. Now, I have an example of one of these. We've seen it a few times, but let's go ahead and cue it up. Yes. All right, I have an example of one of these. This is a professional basketball player in the 90s. I have no idea who it is, although basketball is my favorite sport, as we know. Is it? I can't read the thing. Okay, someone knows Dwight Howard? Dwight Howard? Okay, cool. This is Hype Dwight Howard. All right, here we go. Now, he's standing there. He's looking very, like, masculine and manly. He's looking back at the camera like, yeah, I know I got swag. What's up, right? Like, he's got that going. He's got the ball in his hand. And on the screen, the milk advertisement. Let's read it together. It says, bounce back, creative. Play on words, basketball. Bounce back. I like that. Oh, man. Need a strong, someone help. I can't read it from here. Rebound. Thank you. Keep reading it. I can't read it from here. Yeah. Need a strong rebound. You guys are doing great. Slam some milk. It's full of vitamins. It's full of protein. It's got game. Anyway, all this language, right? And then the infamous question, got milk? Like, do you have this thing? And Dwight, our boy Dwight Howard there is rocking the milk mustache. And I'm telling you, like, you look at it and you're like, I don't feel compelled necessarily to drink milk right now. But I'm telling you, in the 90s, this was like the jam. For my small group leaders in the room, can I get an amen? Like, everybody was doing got milk, everybody. And if you were young and you had like a crush, like a Hollywood crush, if you were growing up and you were like, oh my gosh, like Topanga from Boy Meets World, she did got milk campaign, all right? Like, everybody was doing God's milk. Yeah, that's what I just said. Thank you, bro. I got it. No, I know. It was the most effective ad campaign. And what they did essentially is made you feel like if you don't have this drink, you're missing out. Now, I don't know about you, but when I look back on it now, it makes me laugh. Like, I think about, could you imagine being a professional NBA? Let's not even say professional. Let's just say you go to the local Y, you play a pickup game of basketball with some people there, you go hard in the paint for an hour, maybe 2 hours, you're sweating, you're hooping, you're jigging and jagging, you're doing all this stuff, you're jumping up and down. And at the end of that time, you're sweating bullets, you're hot, you're winded, and you think, man, I need something refreshing. You know what I want? Some low-fat milk. No. Like, you drink a drop of that, and that point, when your core temperature's up and you're sweating, you're going to be feeling nauseous, possibly even throw up, right? So as I was going through some of these 90s ads today, it was so funny because early Taylor Swift, where my Swifties at? Yeah. I don't mean recent Swifties. I'm talking where my OG Swifties at. Where are my Tim McGraw Swifties at? Where's my teardrops on my guitar Swifties at? Drew is still missing out, okay? Swiftie did a Got Milk campaign when she was like brand new, and it made people think like, "Wow, my aim in life is to be a musician, you know what I need to be chugging as I'm warming up my voice? Milk. That helps me sing better." What this ad campaign did, it was so amazing. Because it leveraged influencers and celebrities and movie stars and rock stars and pop stars and infamous cartoon characters and politicians. It leveraged each and every one of their status and names to make you think, man, if I drink milk, I can be like them. Like if you were a young hooper and you saw old Dwight Howard with a milk mustache and you're like, dude, my dream is to be in the NBA. You know what you're asking mom for? Milk. Mom, can you go buy some low-fat milk? Why? Dwight Howard drinks milk, okay? If your aim in life, it's like be a famous singer and you like looked up to Taylor Swift, you're gonna be asking mom for some milk. Why? So I can become better at singing and music and writing songs. I just need a few more guys to break up with me and then I'm gonna make it. Beyonce did a Got Milk campaign. Yeah, Queen B. She's still the queen. She did a Got Milk campaign. Everybody was doing Got Milk campaigns. And they convinced, this is the power of marketing, right? Like, this is what they're meant to do. But they convinced people, this has been the missing ingredient from your life in order to achieve your goals in this life. Milk. Over 2 decades of the most effective marketing campaign. 70, thank you, Tommy. 70 commercials, 250 milk mustaches. Nothing's compared to it since. They convinced, like, okay, I know this, we're not like super statistics in here, but think about this for a second. At any given time, 80% of U.S. consumers, that means anybody living in our country who was buying things, at any given time, 80% of U.S. consumers were being exposed to the Got Milk campaign. Like, they were everywhere. Everyone was got milking, if that's a verb. Everyone was doing it. It is now. Okay. What they convinced you was, this is the missing ingredient of your life. This is what you've been needing all along. If you want to achieve your dreams, like that famous singer, like that professional athlete, like this rock star, like this pop star, like this actor, if you want to get there, this can get you on the way. And I know it sounds so silly when you break it down like that, but that's the power of marketing. Like, we still do it today. You buy products today based on how you were influenced to think about that product, largely because someone famous endorsed it. Influencers are leveraging this still today. That's the power of marketing, and it worked. And so everyone was like, oh, milk, I need milk, got milk. Now, your boy, when I was growing up, I didn't know this till much later, but your boy was lactose intolerant. So in my pursuit of got milk, I spent a lot of time in the bathroom. Got bathroom. Yes, I did. All right. I didn't know. Why does my stomach always hurt when I drink that? I don't know. It did. Tommy. Now, what I think, you're wondering, like, dude, why are we talking about milk tonight? And for so long. This is a long intro, man. Yeah. Here's what I think. In the same way that ad campaign convinced little boys and little girls, like, hey, if you want to be the next Dwight Howard, this is what you need. If you want to be the next Taylor Swift, this is what you need. All you have to do is drink milk. What you realized is, growing up, let me ask you guys, as you drank milk growing up, did it make you any better at whatever sport? If you were pursuing, like, if you were trying to be a better musician, if you were trying to do better in school, if you were trying to learn a different language, got, what's milk in Spanish? Got leche. Excuse me, do you have leche? I'm trying to learn the Spanish. All right, no matter what it is, let me ask you a question. Will you actually get better as a basketball player, football player, musician, whatever, simply because you're drinking milk? Yes. No, stop that nonsense. No, you will not. If you're not also putting in the work, putting in the hours, if you're not also disciplining and taking what's ours, if you're not disciplining yourself, then no matter how much milk you're drinking, you will never reach your goals, right? Like, we know that. So think about it this way. Like, I'm going to give you an example from my own life. All of us have that kind of thing that we really, really want. Like, dude, if I could just achieve that. Like, for some of you, you look at professional athletes and you're like, oh, dude, I want that. Like, I just hope I grow up and I'm drafted by, like, my team, right? Like, some of you want that. Others of you, like, legitimately think you're going to be a famous influencer one day. And you watch people like Charli D'Amelio, or you watch people like Addie Rae, or you watch people like whoever, and you're like, that is what I'm going to be, right? Like, you have convinced yourself of this, right? Or you want to be a musician. Maybe you're super into John Mayer. I got you, Flo. But what you realize is, musicians attest to this, You don't just get there because you want it. Like, you've got to put in hours. Callous fingers and bloody fingers, and you've got to master rhythm and slap on the guitar and learn how to move your fingers, and muscle memory has to develop, and you've got to discipline that habit. It doesn't just happen. So here's an example from my life. I was talking to my wife, like, man, I'm trying to think of a good example, and I had something in mind, and she said it, and I was like, all right, well, if we're both thinking that, let's go with that. So here's my example, all right? I have always admired people, this sounds so dumb, but I have always admired people and been jealous of people who are able to wake up early. Honestly, yeah. I know, it's like, really, that's your goal? Hear me out, guys. The older you get, the more you realize, like, time is valuable, okay? So I have always admired people. When I think about, wow, people get up before the sun, that's amazing to me. Like, once I started having kids, I was up before the sun, but it wasn't for the right reason. I have kids. I have three. Yeah. I know. I'm married, too. All right. I know. 9 years. Bear with me. When I see people get up before the sun, I'm like, wow. And they get up and they practice like an ancient art of brewing coffee. And I'm like, ooh, that sounds pretty good. And then they have like, they have alone time, like no one's messing with them. And some of them even read, and I'm like, wow, I wish I were more well-read. Like, I've got a stack of books that I want to read, but I never read. And some of them even like squeeze in workouts even before the sun's up. Wow! And they get like so much done all before 6 a.m., before anyone else is opening their eyes. They've gotten like more done in a few hours than most people get done in half a day. And I've always been so envious of that, and I've always tried to be a morning person. I've always tried. I have bought fancy alarm clocks that don't just make noise, but also have light. Like, I've doubled down. I have set multiple alarms. I don't know if that's you, but I've got like, all right, I need to wake up at 6, so I'm going to set 6, 6:01, 6:02, 6:03, 6:04, 6:06. I'm going to skip 6:05. I need a few minutes of sleep there. Like, I do that. Anytime the alarm goes off, I snooze. All right, not this one, but the next one. I need a few rounds to really get me going, right? Like, I have always wanted to. But here's the reality. What I realize is, in order to have that life, I would actually have to change my lifestyle, which I don't want to do, because I want to be honest with you guys, I'm a night owl. Like, I like staying up late. I like staying up till 1 or 2 in the morning. I know. For me, thinking about going to bed at 9:30 or 10 or 10:30, I feel like I'm wasting so many hours. Like, how much, wow, I could be doing things at 11, 12, 1, and 2. Like, why would I not be awake? Like, for me, it's enjoyable. And so what I've realized is I really, really want to be a morning person, but I would actually have to change my lifestyle, which I don't want to do. And we are so guilty of this all the time. We really want to be a professional athlete, but we don't actually want to put in all that work and discipline and hours and wake up early and run and focus on whatever craft we're trying to develop for that sport and devote weekends to traveling teams and do all that. Why can't it be as easy as just drinking milk? Dwight Howard did it. How come I can't do it? We really want to be musicians, but we realize, man, like, the hours you have to put in to learn that instrument, to hone your voice, and you've got to put yourself out there, and you've got to get exposure, and it's not just about the music, it's about the platform, and you've got to leverage all this stuff. And it's like, man, I want the end result. I don't necessarily want the process to get there. And we are so notoriously guilty of desiring the final product without actually changing our lifestyle to get there, right? And we were sold this in the 90s. You don't have to change your lifestyle. All you have to do is buy this, and then you can have it. But we know that that is not true. However, I would suggest that maybe tonight, that is the mentality we bring to our faith. That somehow along the way, we have bought into that same idea. I don't know where it came from. I don't know who first told us this. But I think that somehow we believe in the same idea. Man, I really, really want the life Jesus offers, and yet I believed in him, I believe in Jesus, I decided to trust Jesus, and yet I don't feel like I have that life. Like, what is the deal? Why? I'm drinking the milk, man. Like, I believed in Jesus, shouldn't it just be that easy? Why don't I have the life that he offers now? So here's the idea. In John chapter 10, verse 10, let's look at this verse together. This is going to be kind of a foundational verse for the entire series, but Jesus is teaching in one of his most famous passages about being a good shepherd, and this is one of his most famous teachings, and Jesus is describing his agenda for leaving heaven and coming to earth. And Jesus says this in John 10:10. He says, I came that they, meaning us, you and me and everyone else who believes in Jesus, that they may have life and have it abundantly. Or another way of translating this is that those who believe in Jesus will have life and have it to the fullest. Like you will have a more full life than anyone else. You will have a more full life by believing in Jesus than you could have ever had by not believing in Jesus. But here's the rub. There are some of us who believe in Jesus and we come to verses like this and we're like, dude, I believe in you, but my life, if I'm really honest, is kind of crappy right now. Jesus, I believe in you, but my life in this season, my life right now, doesn't feel like it's abundant or life to the fullest. So, am I misunderstanding what you mean here, or is it just wrong? Like, think about some of the things Jesus offered in this life he's talking about. If you read through the Gospels and you read through the Bible, here's some things that the Bible says Jesus offers. In John chapter 14, Jesus says that he offers peace. Not as the world gives, it's a different kind of peace. It's an internal peace. It's a peace of the soul. Jesus says, my peace I give you, my peace I leave you. This generation, your generation, struggles with anxiety and worry and depression more than any other generation in history, and it's the most medicated generation in history, and something's not working. We are worried, we are anxious, we are bombarded with negative ideas and news every single day. We have so much information to download and then process, we can't keep up. We are an anxious generation, and Jesus says, hey, you know one of the things I offer is peace? A settling of your soul? And so many of us in this room are like, yeah, dude, I want peace. How do I get that peace? And Jesus, well, I offer it. I offer that. And it's kind of like, well, but I believe in you, and I don't feel like I have peace. In fact, I feel the opposite. I feel stirred up all the time. I'm worried about things that aren't even happening, and I'm worried about future, and I'm worried about this, and I'm processing that, and in that conversation, did I say the right thing, and do they even like me? And we get so wrapped up in all this anxiety, and Jesus says, no way to offer peace. And we come to this verse, and we're like, dude, you say you give us life to the fullest, and peace is one of those things, and yet I believe in you, and I don't feel like I have peace. So what's the deal? You know what else Jesus says he offers is joy. Happiness is different than joy. Happiness is circumstantial. You can be happy or unhappy depending on circumstances, but joy is unaffected by circumstances. You can have the worst day ever and still have joy deep in your soul because you know the creator of the universe lives inside of you and loves you and has a plan for your life, and there's something about that that brings joy. Jesus offers joy. Unaffected by circumstance. And you hear that and you're like, dude, give me some of that. Because man, I've been feeling sad lately and my soul has felt so defeated lately. How do I get that? Well, you believe in Jesus. And you might look at me and be like, well, I do. And I don't feel that. Or what about contentment? We all know this. It's an incredibly consumeristic culture that we live in. It's all about the new and the better and buy this and let's advertise that to get you to spend money on this and let's market that. And it's all about, oh, what can I get better? How can I upgrade? What's next? What's new? Oh, Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Like it's all about getting more, more, more. And we've been told that if you have more, you'll be happier in this life. You'll be more content in this life. You guys are old enough by now to know that's not a lie. I mean, it is a lie. You guys are old enough to know that doesn't work. If it did work, it would have worked by now. They wouldn't have to keep upgrading things if that actually worked. They wouldn't have to keep marketing new and better things if that actually worked. It doesn't matter how many things you buy, contentment, being content, being satisfied in this life does not come from possessions. Jesus actually offers satisfaction, contentment in this life. Whether you have a lot of things or little things, some of the most joyful and satisfied people in the world that I have ever met are some of the most physically poor and depraved people on this planet, living in the slums of third world countries. And yet they have more radiant joy than any American I've ever met. It's because they've discovered contentment in Jesus. And you hear that and you're like, I want that. How do I get that? Well, you believe in Jesus. And you'll say, but I do, and I'm not feeling that. Or what about purpose? Knowing what you are meant to be doing in this life and how you can live within the will of God and how you contribute to the big picture of it all and what God wants to do through you. Or what about worth? The fact that you matter, the fact that you have value, not because of what you do, but because of whose you are and because God says you have worth because his image is in you. Or what about your identity? Not falling into the comparison traps and always looking at others and their lives and their pictures and their families and always thinking you're less than. But what if you began to derive your identity from Jesus and his accomplishments? All of these things Jesus offers, and all of them sound so good. That's part of the abundant life. But you'll look at me and be like, okay, dude, but I believe in Jesus and I don't feel like I'm actually experiencing that abundant life. So what's the deal? And what I'd maybe like to propose tonight is that somewhere along the line, we have begun to think about faith in Jesus like got milk. Like, oh, dude, if I just drink this, then I'll be a professional athlete. It's that easy. If I just go buy some low fat, maybe even 1%, I could be the next Taylor Swift. It's that simple. And we've begun to apply that theology to our faith in Jesus. And we believe in Jesus, and a lot of things in life don't change. And then we're like, dude, what is the deal, man? Jesus says he came to offer life. So where's the better life, right? Now, I want to be clear about something tonight. I think there are certain things in this life that are true the moment you believe in Jesus. The moment you believe in Jesus, there are transactional things that happen. I want to be very clear about that. The moment you believe in Jesus, I believe you are saved from your sins. The moment you believe in Jesus, I believe you're forgiven of your sins. The moment you believe in Jesus, I believe you're filled with his presence and his spirit now lives inside of you as a living temple of God, and he helps you have victory over sin in this life. I believe you have an eternal salvation and security with Jesus the moment you believe in him. There are a lot of things that are instant through faith. But other things, like if we're talking about this life, this man, how do I have peace? How do I have joy? How do I have a contentment? Like if we're talking about those type of things, it may not be as easy as, oh, well, just because you believe in Jesus, you'll have those things. If that were true, then everybody who believes in Jesus would already be living in the perfect life here on earth. And I think you guys are smart enough to know, well, they're not, and yet they do love Jesus, so am I missing something? So here's what I would like to propose tonight, and in fact, this will be a core idea for the entire series. This is very important. If you're taking notes, this would be one to write down. We will never experience the life that Jesus offers until we embrace the lifestyle that Jesus modeled. I'm going to say it again. We will never experience the life Jesus offers, like that John 10:10 thing, I've come so that they may have life and have it abundantly and have it to the fullest, peace and joy and contentment in this life and knowing their purpose and identity and worth and all these other wonderful things. We will never experience that kind of life until we embrace the lifestyle that Jesus modeled. Do you have salvation because you believe in Jesus? Absolutely. Are you forgiven of your sins? Absolutely. Do you have an eternity with Jesus? Absolutely. But if you're living on this earth and you believe in Jesus and yet you look at your life and you're like, dude, I'm struggling. I feel like I'm missing something. I'm not feeling God. I feel distant from God. I'm anxious. I'm worried. I feel sad. I don't even feel like the presence of God. I have no desire to pursue God. I'm not excited about my faith. If you're there, then I might suggest to you, or I would ask you some questions, tell me the kind of lifestyle you're living. Because in order to experience the life that Jesus offers, you have to embrace the lifestyle that he modeled. It's not as easy as drinking milk. You actually have to develop habits in your life. The patterns of your life are perfectly designed to bring about the outcome of your reality. In other words, your lifestyle creates the reality. So have you embraced the lifestyle that Jesus modeled? You might ask, well, dude, what's the lifestyle he modeled? Well, if you read through the Gospels, let's just think of a few things that Jesus modeled. Jesus seemed to have a very unhurried manner of living. Now, he was busy for sure. Don't confuse busyness and hurry. He was busy, but he was never in a hurry. He was never in a rush. He was always fully present with the people that he was with while he was with them. He was never hurried. He always seemed to have a pulse on where he needed to be and when he needed to be somewhere else. He was fully present. How many of us in this room have grown up in a culture, American culture, which is notoriously guilty of overcommitting, saying yes to too many things, taking on too much, putting way too much pressure on the backs of young teenagers? You're committed to something every night. You have extracurricular this and weekend commitments to that, and you got this and you got that, and you got to do schoolwork, and you also have that thing and that job and, oh, this event. And like, we are so overcommitted, how could we ever possibly live an unhurried life? Jesus was never hurried. And part of that was because of pace. He knew how to pace his life. Jesus often would retreat away and be on his own. He would literally be hanging out with his disciples, and then they'd wake up the next morning and they'd be like, yo, where's the master? And Jesus would be off somewhere praying. He was known to withdraw from his friends to go spend time by himself in silence and solitude. That means no background music on Spotify playing to create the vibe. Just being with God, all right? No phone nearby. No Bluetooth LED wireless speaker that's actually just a light. Okay, nothing like that. He would regularly practice silence and solitude. Jesus had regular prayer retreats where he would withdraw and just be with God. And think about our generation. Think about our culture. We are terrified of that reality. To intentionally withdraw from my friends and go and just sit by myself in silence? What would happen if, like, emotions came to the surface that I would actually have to deal with and process? I'd much rather distract myself from them. And how could I even focus on what God might want to tell me when I'm so worried about what am I missing out on? Like, what if my friends are doing something super fun right now and they're even posting about it, and I'll see the pictures later and I'm not in them? Like, think about our culture. How often, seriously, how often do you make it a habit to withdraw from activity and hype and people and just go be alone and listen to what God might have to say to you in silence? Jesus had a pretty simplistic, as far as we can tell, had a pretty simplistic lifestyle. Literally, he was homeless. He was just traveled around. He relied on the generosity of others to provide for him. He had the clothes on his back, and as people would donate money to his ministry, they would have that money to provide food for him and his disciples or whatever. But dude, Jesus was not wrapped up in consumer culture. He was not waiting on Black Friday to come around. He was not waiting on Cyber Monday. Oh, dude, look at the tunics are on sale. Yo, you think we can get a few for me and the boys? Like, he wasn't wrapped up in all that. He had a very simplistic lifestyle apart from consumeristic living. You know what's amazing? He seems content. He seems very at peace with it. Jesus wasn't distracted. Do you know that the average U.S. adult, average, like in the middle, touches their phone screen somewhere around 2,700 times a day? That's average. Like, you know we have a digital addiction, right? Okay, I'm not anti-phone. I have one. I'm on social media. But we are addicted. In fact, people even feel what they call phantom vibrations. If they put their phone somewhere else, they can feel it vibrating in their pocket sometimes. It's not there. Like, we've got problems. You want to know why you're so distracted and stressed and worked up about things and discontent and feeling like you're so spiritually shallow in this life and that you can't feel the presence of God? Honestly, it's because we are hoping that somehow through believing in Jesus, we will immediately have this transactional thing to where we are the most spiritually healthy people on the planet. And yet we don't cultivate habits that would actually get us there. If you want to experience the life Jesus offers, if you want peace, you've got to think about, like, man, what am I allowing to impact my brain? What am I allowing to affect my soul? People who study the brain have discovered that the hour after you wake up and the hour right before you fall asleep are the most influential hours of the day in terms of the effect it has on your brain. So if you go to bed at night scrolling on your phone and you're being bombarded with TikTok videos or Instagram, or you're watching Netflix and you're looking at things that may or may not be inappropriate, but if they're violent, if they're full of ungodly things, if you're looking at, I mean, honestly, a lot of stuff on social media, you guys know this, is basically softcore pornography. Like, if you're looking at those things right before you go to bed, if that's what you fall asleep to, and the moment you wake up, you pick up your phone to see what's happened while you were asleep, your brain is literally a ball of Play-Doh that is being morphed into whatever Instagram or TikTok or the news wants you to think. Like, we have to learn how to cultivate habits, a lifestyle that Jesus modeled, if we are ever expecting to experience the life that he talks about, the life and life to the fullest. There's no way that we can be addicted to our phones, bombarded with negativity, hooked on the dopamine and endorphins that come through social media, and fearing that we're missing out and never spending time alone and never being in God's word and never spending time in prayer. There's no way that we can cultivate that lifestyle and be like, God, where's my peace, man? Like, where is it? I'm so stressed out. How come this isn't working? It's like, dude. We cannot experience the life Jesus offers unless we embrace the lifestyle that he modeled. There is no got milk for spirituality. You don't just drink it and become the professional NBA player. You cultivate habits. You cultivate rhythms of life. You build those in. John 15, let's end on this passage. Jesus is teaching, he's teaching an idea to his followers, to his disciples, to his apprentices. He's the master, and they're trying to learn the ways of the master. He's teaching an idea to them. John 15, if you've ever taken my kingdom leadership class, you know how core of an idea this is. The older I get and the more I follow Jesus, the more convinced I am that this is foundational. Like, this is where it starts. So if you're in the room tonight and you're wondering, like, all right, man, I'm willing to give it a shot. How do I cultivate habits? How do I build a lifestyle around the ways of Jesus? I don't think there is a formula, but if there is a starting point, it would be here. Jesus is teaching, John 15. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this, my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples, my followers. As the Father loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. So what's the word that keeps coming up in this passage over and over and over? Abide. It's the Greek word meno, and it literally means to remain in, or to like make a home in. It's the idea of like, man, I am planted here and I'm not going anywhere. Jesus in this passage, in fact, 10 times in those 11 verses, uses this idea, remain in me and I'll remain in you. Remain in me and I'll remain in you. Make your home in me and I'll make my home in you. Just as I remained in the Father, you remain in me. Like, time and time and time again, this foundational idea is this idea of remaining. Like, how do we develop a lifestyle? How do we know how Jesus lived? How do we actually cultivate those habits in our life? If there is a square one, this is it. Learn how to remain in Jesus. Well, Matt, what does that mean? It means this. Your faith in Jesus, I promise you, will never reach full potential if you believe that your faith in Jesus is cultivated by coming to a building once a week. Like, that's your experiencing God. And man, if that's all you're doing, that's awesome. Like, please hear me. I am not saying, this is not a guilt trip. Like, we're all in this. See, I'm learning how to remain in Jesus. This is no guilt trip. I need grace. We all need grace. But remaining in Jesus means, like, my relationship with him doesn't mean I go to a building once a week and I stay there for an hour and I listen to some guy talk and I go home and I never think about what they really said, but next week I'll be back. And like, that will never produce this blossoming, beautiful, dynamic relationship. Why? Because no relationship in the world functions that way. Imagine if I treated my marriage like that. I want a really healthy marriage, so I should probably schedule 1 hour a week to go and sit in front of my wife while she talks. I'm not going to say much. I'm just going to listen and then forget everything she said afterwards. That'll produce intimacy. Like, you guys will look at me like, no, dude. And yet, we think that somehow that approach to God will bring about maximum intimacy. Like, I believe in Jesus. Why am I not experiencing depth of intimacy? I believe in Jesus. Why don't I feel peace? I believe in Jesus. Why am I so anxious? I believe in Jesus. What is my purpose? It's like, cultivate habits. Embrace the lifestyle. What this might mean is you might actually have to go home and reevaluate your lifestyle. And this is where most people break down. It's the same idea. I want to be a professional NBA player. Oh, but it's not as easy as drinking milk. You actually have to put in like hours and years of just working on your form. Like, no, I don't want that. I want to be a professional musician. Oh, but it's not easy as drinking milk. You actually have to like work at this thing. Nah, it's too much work. Like, this is where most people break down. We have great intentions, not many actions. We want a beautiful, flourishing relationship with Jesus. But most of us don't want to adopt a simplistic lifestyle. Most of us don't want to practice silence and solitude. Most of us don't want to cultivate habits of spending time in the Word and prayer. Most of us don't want to practice radical generosity with what God has given us. Jesus had a lifestyle, and it wasn't accidental. And yet you look at him, regardless of how you feel about him, Jesus is so compelling as a character. You look at him and here's someone who has peace, has purpose, has clarity in life, is at rest, knows who he is, knows what life is about, is kind and loving to others, is generous, doesn't seem worked up, is not in a hurry, is not anxious, is not doubtful. And you look at him, you're like, I want that. And it's like, okay, but here's how. It's like, ah, it's too hard. It's like, ah. We cultivate habits that help us embrace the lifestyle Jesus modeled. And that all stems from remaining in Jesus. Now, here's the deal. Some of us are really, really like, okay, I want to do this. I'm gung-ho. So tonight, I'm going to go home. I'm going to make a list. I'm going to start reading my Bible like 15 minutes a day. I'm going to pray 20 minutes a day because I'm really spiritual. I'm going to wake up early. I know Matt can't, but I will because I'm even more spiritual than Matt. Like, you're going to go home and you're going to make this list and list and list. Hear me. Embracing the lifestyle of Jesus is not meant to drive you towards legalism. That is not what this is about. I'm not talking about working your way into being more like Jesus. Because think about the vine. In John 15, I'm the vine, you're the branches. He who abides in me or remains in me bears much fruit. Have you ever seen a grapevine trying its hardest to bear fruit and struggling and striving like, ooh, come on, grapes? No. The vineyard is producing fruit because the branches are attached to the source of life, the vine. They simply remain in the vine and they begin to bear fruit. This is not legalism and like try harder and you can be more like Jesus. This is not what this is about. It's about embracing the grace that God has for you. It may mean reprioritizing your life to experience the fullness of life that Jesus offers. But if we're not careful, this can become super legalistic. So here's how I want us to think about it. I have here like a little Lego piece, all right? This is like, this represents your life, okay? There's a man in my life. He mentored me in college. He discipled me in college. He's, by all accounts, like my spiritual dad. I didn't know what it meant to be discipled until this guy, all right? I look at him and I'm like, this dude is a spiritual giant. Like, he's an Anglican priest. He knows all sorts of like ancient liturgies. He's just this like man's man. Like, literally, he's literally punched a raccoon. I don't know why that appeals to me so much, but it does. Yeah, it was eating his garbage, and he was like, get out of here. And, but I've always described this man like he smells like the Spirit of God. And I know that sounds weird, but what I mean by that is like he has been in the presence of God. That is his lifestyle. Every time I was around him, I was like, this man just has the presence of God. And I was always like, how could I ever achieve that? And I would, when I was in college, I would look out of my hallway, had a stairwell that went down, and every Tuesday afternoon, that stairwell window faced this big field, and I would always see him out there in the middle of the field in a chair, his palms up, big smile on his face, and he would just sit there for hours. And I would always be like, dang, I mean, this man, he's got something. And I would always think, okay, I want it. And I like, I would just think I could have it overnight. Here's what I have learned over time. Because it's really easy to hear about, like, oh, man, I'm going to become a spiritual giant. I'm going to be generous, and I'm going to live like Jesus lived, and tomorrow it all starts. Here's what I would just say. This little Lego brick right here in the back may even be hard to see. This little Lego brick. Think about your spiritual life in this way. This week or this month, maybe, your prayer is, God, would you teach me what it means to remain in you? Like, what if you just invited that prayer? That literally took 5 seconds to say. What if you just said that a few times a week? God, would you teach me what it means to remain, to abide, to make my home in you? Would you teach me? And what if we began to see that as like, all right, there's one spiritual brick on our life. And what if like next month, as God begins to stir things up, you decide, all right, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna pray like for 5 minutes this week. And I know you're like, that doesn't seem like very much time. It's not. Forget the grandiose ideas of like, I'm gonna wake up every day and pray half an hour. Like, forget, just start small. Like, this week I'm gonna pray for 5 minutes. Maybe just one day this week, I'm just gonna sit down for 5 minutes. I don't even know what to say. I don't even know where to start. I'm just gonna try it. I'm gonna try it out. And guess what? You just added another brick to your life. You're beginning to cultivate habits. You're beginning to cultivate rhythms. And maybe next month you decide, all right, I've never really read my Bible. I don't even know where to start. God, would you help me? Would you help me learn? And maybe you just, I'm gonna read the Gospel of John or whatever. You just, for 10 minutes a week, I'm just gonna start embracing Bible reading as a habit in my life. I'm gonna cultivate that habit. And you begin to cultivate that, and guess what? You added another brick to your life. We tend to look at spiritual leaders and spiritual giants in this world, and we're like, dang, I want that lifestyle. And we tend to forget, dude, that lifestyle was built brick by brick by brick. It's small steps. This is not about legalism. It's not about trying harder and doing better and working your way into righteousness. This is about embracing the ways of Jesus. If we say we follow Jesus, then he is our master. What was his lifestyle? I want that lifestyle. I have to realize I have to undo a lot of Americanism in order to embrace that lifestyle, so it's going to take a while. I have to have a realistic idea of that, and I need the grace of God. But you go brick at a time, and before you know it, maybe at the end of the year, you've got like this cool little, look at that. I don't know. I know. And I know you're like, dude, that's not that big. Okay, but that's 1 year. Think about 10 years. Think about 50 years, right? The idea is we have, I think, treated our spirituality like, dude, I should be able to overnight drink some whatever spiritual juice milk that Jesus offers and have the most spiritual lifestyle, full of peace, full of like trust and joy and hope and content. There's no milk. It is a lifelong pursuit of trying to learn how to live like our master, Jesus. That means undoing some things we've learned over the years. It means embracing new things. It is a dedication to the discipline. But we will never experience the life that he offers unless we embrace the lifestyle that he modeled. So how did Jesus live? So here's the deal, though. This may not look like much, but check this out. At the end of a lifetime, our lives could be looking like this. That is real. This is the world record for the tallest Lego tower. That is a real crane. There's a guy at the top there. Those are real Legos. Like, we look at that and we're like, ooh, that's what I want. But when you realize that it goes so slowly and you just put brick by brick, you're like, dude, that will take forever. It takes a lifetime. It takes a lifetime. And guess what? That's okay. It's normal. It's trial and error. The most beautiful invitation Jesus gave, I think, to the disciples is, why don't you come and see? Come and see. Jesus offers this open invitation. I offer the best life this world has to offer. Why don't you come and see what it's like? Try on a few of my lifestyle behaviors. Try them on. Try being generous for a week. Give some stuff away. Go 3 months without buying anything brand new for yourself. And the money you would have used, Give it to someone in need. See how that feels. Like, try it on. Come and see if my lifestyle is actually better. And I promise you, you will begin to experience a thriving and deep and passionate faith like never before. If we want to experience the life of Jesus, we have to embrace the lifestyle of Jesus. Terrible timing. All right, let's pray. Jesus, we love you. We love you so much. And I do pray for this room. I pray for these students. As we navigate this series and we talk about practicing the way, I do pray that you would keep that word on our mind. It is practice. It is trial and error. It is trying it on. It is trying it out. It is tasting and seeing. It is, Jesus, in many ways, it is experiential. We are believing in faith that what you offer is actually better than what this world offers. And we are trying to reorient our lifestyle around the ways that you modeled. And so often that seems so overwhelming. And so I pray you would give us the courage to start. I pray you would give us the grace to keep going. And I pray you would help us see the big picture. It's not about earning anything. It's not about trying to receive something from you. We're already loved. We're already your children. We're already have a place to belong. We've already been adopted into your family. Our eternity is secure. Father, you hold us in the palm of your hand. And this is not about earning. This is about experiencing the best life possible. Help us undo some of the Americanism things that we've learned over the years that are actually leading us to death, and that we think will give us life, but we know they don't. Jesus, help us embrace your lifestyle. Give us the courage to do it. Help us start small. We ask these things, Jesus, in your name. Amen.